Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Welcome, Anne Wilson here, and it is my pleasure to host Emerge Australia's podcast series for 2026, brought to you during ME Awareness Week. I acknowledge the traditional custodians of country and their connections to land, sea and community, and pay my respect to elders past and present, and those listening to this podcast, noting their continuing contributions, struggles and achievements. Well, I don't know about you, but when I consider the times in which we currently live, the lyrics of John Lennon's Imagine seem to resonate with what I'm sure we all wish for. A world where the brotherhood of man is celebrated globally, a peaceful world without war, a world without stigma or discrimination, where we have equity of access to healthcare, treatments, clinical services and cures. Visionary lyrics from John Lennon, written in 1971, so relevant today as they were then. In this series, designed to focus on post-exertional malaise, or PEM, as we call it, our key theme for World ME Awareness Week, I'm delighted to interview people with ME-CFS and allied health professionals to share their lived experience of PEM and the hidden harm of trying harder. This podcast series may include discussions on sensitive topics, including mental health and other health-related information. Some listeners may find this content confronting, triggering, or challenging. The information shared is intended for general informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice. So listener discretion is advised. Well, let's get into this wonderful interview with today's guest, none other than Emerge Australia's own clinical educator, Kate Herbert, RN. Kate is a registered nurse living with ME-CFS. She joined the Emerge Australia team at the start of 2021 after completing honours by research, with her topic being quality of life in ME-CFS. Kate has a background in paediatrics and communicable disease control. She works largely from home and is passionate about improving health practitioner knowledge and capacity to provide safe care to those impacted by ME-CFS. Kate integrates her personal experience, current research, and knowledge gained through connecting with people within the ME-CFS community. Welcome to today's podcast, Kate, and it's great having you on board to interview.
Thank you, Anne, for having me.
So, tell us a little bit about yourself. Just, we'd like to go into getting a bit of an insight on how post-exertional malaise affects your daily life and what specific challenges it presents. But you started in 2021 at Emerge Australia. I started in 2021 at Emerge Australia. Tell us a little bit about your journey and how you feel about working at Emerge Australia.
Yeah, that was a very intense year. That was all. So I started volunteering with Emerge to write some health information content that led to a job offer, which was very lovely. So, and that was great because, you know, maintaining your registration when you're not able to work clinically is very tricky. So I'd sort of been through that period of doing some study so that I could keep my registration, keep currency. And I wasn't sure if that was going to be able to continue. So being able to pick up some work with Emerge has been really wonderful, and being able to sort of bring that both professional and personal experience into something that I care very deeply about has meant a lot. I have to say, sometimes I'm like, I don't want to hear about ME/CFS ever again. But I kind of don't have a choice. I live with it. And also there's still a lot of really important work to do, I think, in changing health practitioners' perceptions and understanding and treatment. So it's sometimes, yeah, it's exciting work, but sometimes very hard work when shifting understanding is really slow. Yeah. So I'm truly honoured to work with such an amazing team. So, yeah.
I can't tell you how important for someone like myself it is to have someone like yourself who's got the lived experience of ME/CFS to provide the wisdom, guidance and direction around so many issues that arise that I actually need advice on. And we're very blessed at Emerge Australia with people of your calibre to be able to virtually put the voice of the person with lived experience on the table and say, no, you know, I don't think that's the right wording, or I don't think that's the right topic, or maybe we could write it this way rather than that. So it just, to me, highlights the absolute value of working together to support the community.
Absolutely. And also, just as you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, and there's such diversity within that community as well. You know, we have other staff members with ME/CFS as well. And I think sometimes it's quite interesting that, you know, I'll say, oh, actually this, and the other person will go, maybe I don't care, or no, this. Like, it's, I think that just, and I think that's important as well, to go that it's not a homogenous patient group with homogenous thoughts and feelings about things. But when you bring enough of that voice together, you hope that you can get the right tone and setting. And sometimes you get it right, sometimes you get it wrong. But that's being human as well, isn't it? We're not perfect, you know, we're not perfect machines that can come up with perfect answers all the time, but we're willing to talk to one another, talk to the community and talk amongst ourselves and see what works and build from
that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Which I think is really valuable.
Absolutely. So we'll get into our first question, which is about PEM, and it's really important that people get a bit of an insight into, from your perspective, how post-exertional malaise affects your daily life and what are the challenges that it specifically represents for you?
Yeah. When I was thinking about this, I think sometimes, and I do this too, I think when we talk about PEM, we forget that, yes, PEM affects function, but ME/CFS on its own is, it affects function. So before I talk about just how it affects PEM affects me, I just want to outline a little bit of my general level of function, which is often referred to as a baseline by people. It's your general level of what you can manage. I'm in the moderate category, but I fluctuate a lot. I can dip into severe very, very quickly, but then at the moment I'm reasonably moderate. So I have about 1,500 steps a day, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's the non-misery level for me. I have a lot of practical support at home. So with that, I can work part-time from bed with a lot of flexibility. But that also means that I make compromises every day to manage that, to prevent PEM, because I don't want to lose any more function. And so that's where the PEM component comes in. I want to stay as stable as I can. And if I keep triggering PEM and making myself worse all the time, there is evidence that that can lead to loss of that baseline function. So I hope that makes sense, that, you know, you've got that baseline, but then if you trigger PEM, you drop further and you don't want to keep doing that. So I'm not a down-to-the-minute planner, but PEM is something that I have to keep in mind all the time. So there's always the question, do I have enough capacity to do this thing now? And also, what other things do I need to do, you know, even today or the next couple of days? And can I do this thing now if I wanted to do those things then? Like, it's a constant you can never not think about it or have at least an awareness of the impact of your activity on other activities. And it's not that that can sound like hypervigilance to a lot of people, but if you're just doing it day to day and you've learned how to do it, it is just the reality of what you need to do to stay stable. And it's not
make it instinctive. It sounds as though it's got to be an instinct that you train your mind to say, can I do this? And if I really want to do this, how do I prepare?
Yeah. And what else do I need to sacrifice or what resources do I need for this to happen? And I think it's also, it's not an exact science. It's not like it's always predictable. So like I'll give a practical example. So over Easter, I went with some friends to a flower farm that's about a 30-minute drive from where I live. I didn't drive. I didn't actually pick flowers. I sat most of the time and it wasn't a big farm. It's not like I had to walk far to get there. It was lovely. It was a really, really beautiful time to spend with friends in a beautiful location and I really needed it. I rested the day before. I rested most of the day on the thing. I rested the day afterwards. And I'm not like rest for me is not always just lying in bed, eyes closed, doing nothing, but it's lots of moments of rest and then doing a little bit and then, you know, another couple of hours of doing very little.
What does rest look like?
Oh my gosh, that's a big question. I think that depends on the person. I think, you know, some people rest, like really radical shutdown rest can be darkened rooms, you know, something over your eyes. It's really the right temperature for you. There's no sensory input. For me, unless I'm actually in really bad PEM, that is actually really, I can't do it. It makes me go nuts. And that's just me. Different people are different. So rest for me can be watching easy content on a streaming service. So it's not stressful content. It's not sort of, it can be lying outside on my couch if the temperature outside is fairly, you know, stable. It can be reading something simple. It can be listening to music that's, again, not too overstimulating. It can depend on what that level of, you know, how much, again, it's a bit instinctual for me. I think it's something you learn over time about what works for you. And I think that's really important. I think being dictatorial about it and saying rest looks like this, and if you don't do the rest like this, then you're going to, that's not, at least from the many people I've spoken to, I don't feel that that is a helpful way to approach rest.
In managing your PEM, you've just spoken about some of the things that you do in order to prepare yourself for whatever it is that
you... Oh, and so for that flower farm, okay, so I thought I'd prepared really well. I actually couldn't work yesterday. I was so slammed with PEM, it was completely unexpected. Like within my normal capacity, that should have been a manageable thing, with the amount of rest I did and the amount of preparation. And so I guess I just wanted to illustrate that, you know, you can do all the things, PEM can still slam you. Because I'm not in PEM all the time and I rest, yesterday was aggressive rest. Yesterday was a lot of eyes closed, blanking things out, which is not something I do a lot of these days. And so I'm okay today. You know, I've just got myself out of it. Yeah, sorry, just to jump in there to illustrate, you can do all the right things and still get slammed. It's not a perfect science. Yeah.
So does that make it difficult to maintain a sense of balance and well-being? It sort of feels to me as though, you know, it can be very up and down. And even if you do plan your rest periods, which I guess we would call, if you do, pace yourself.
Yeah.
Vigorously, which is the process of protecting yourself from falling into PEM, things can still be very up and down. It can still be a bit of a roller coaster in terms of managing your energy. Is that correct?
Yes. And look, I was going to talk about it a little bit further on, but I can talk about it here. So one of the big things that I did when I finally started learning about pacing and taking it seriously was I was linked up with a really good exercise physiologist who really understands. He has lived experience of PEM. He also understands the physiology and the pathophysiology and that sort of thing. And so, you know, we did a lot of tracking of data. I don't do this anymore. I don't track lots of data points. I'm just not that sort of person. For some people, that is really what they love doing. And so, like I always emphasize, it's what works for you. But I needed that initial really intensive just tracking of my heart rate variability. So that's that, the heart rate variability is that moment by moment variation between heartbeats. So, and then also my heart rate, how my heart rate was responding to things, what my step counts were, what my symptom burden was. All we tracked it over quite a few months. And that started to help me understand, get a better grasp of how many steps was too many. High cognitive load days. So a work day, 600 steps is about all I can manage. Non-work days is about 1,500 steps a day, and not going to, like, it's just started to give me some understanding of some of the patterns of how my body responds. Another one for anybody who has a menstrual cycle was that it was really, really clear that the first half of my cycle, I have so much more capacity than the second half. And when you talk about trying to have a sense of even keel or not feeling like you're going nuts all the time, understanding that can be really, I found that really valuable, because I think anybody who's experienced severe PEM and severe loss of function, it's very easy to go into a sense of panic if you go into PEM, because you're like, is your whole body is like, is this my new normal? Is this, especially if it goes on for days and days, it can be really quite frightening. But if I can understand that, okay, this is the second half of my cycle, I'm usually not so great. I can probably wait this out and see what happens. Obviously, I need to rest more. I need to hydrate better. I make sure I'm doing all the self-care things that I need to do. But I think having information that I know what I can with some action plans helps. I'm not saying that I don't still panic or feel that sense of, you know, when you have so little function and then you lose more function in a day and you have to change all your plans, that's really hard to deal with. I don't know if I have a magic formula for how to stay sane. I don't know. I've probably lost a bit of the track.
When you find it, can you give it to me?
Pardon? When I find it, I'll give it. I'll tell you.
I could do with a bit of sanity.
Yeah, I probably rambled up and lost the point. I'm sorry, but
no, don't worry. Don't worry. I'm going to get you back onto it though.
Yeah.
Because, and I don't want a dictionary definition, but can you describe how you explain PEM to others, as in what do you say it is, and, you know, what would the definition of PEM really be?
Oh, you know, I feel really terrible because I should be able to just say this off the bat, but I actually get a sense of panic every time someone asks me this. And it's because I was thinking about why. I think it's just because I've, again, when you've experienced so much stigma, dismissal, trying to get help in circumstances with people that should be able to help you who can't, you kind of build up this sense of just like, I don't know how to do this anymore. But you're asking me to, how do I explain PEM to people? If someone is in a listening frame of mind, so they've come to a talk or they are actively asking me what my experience is, I guess there's a couple of things that we like to peel back. It's not just fatigue, that there's a multi-system response to any type of exertion. So we're not talking about just, I went for a walk and now I'm stuffed. We're talking about, depending on someone's level of severity, I took a phone call or I did half a day of work or I took a shower or I went to a flower farm with some friends. You know, that's not a negative experience at all, but it's all exertion that all contributes to load. And then how does your body respond to that load? It's not proportional to the load. It doesn't make sense. It's like you did this thing, now you have this big flare in symptoms. It doesn't make sense from a normal kind of like response that a normal person would have to that load. And then the recovery isn't normal either. So you can't just have a good sleep and it's done and dusted. And the other thing, sorry, out of sync, the timeline, it's often delayed. So I thought I'd got away with that flower farm expedition. It was actually 72 hours later that I got slammed. Pretty classic for me. 24 to 72 hours is a pretty classic kind of thing. You can feel like you did the thing and you're okay. And then there's this weird timeline gap where you're probably okay. And then suddenly you're not okay. And that is, we're not taught that in medical or nursing or allied. That is not taught in medicine. It's a very, again, that's not a normal response to exertion. I probably rambled again.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I get it. So what you're saying about PEM is that it's pretty unpredictable. So it sounds to me as though what you're saying is that even though you think you are preparing for an event or an issue or something you have to do, that and you think you're over it, it's still pretty unpredictable because it can come at any time after you've exerted whatever bit of energy on whatever activity.
Yeah, I think there's a level of predictability once you understand your own patterns and your own capacity. But within that, it's still, and so, look, I think some people will say, oh, it's really predictable. I can do this and this will happen. Like, again, there's variation between people's experiences. But I think it's that, yes, there's an element of unpredictability as well. It's not always clear how you're going to respond to something. And so you can live within this fairly safe kind of like, you know, they call it the energy envelope. It's kind of like, or the, I kind of think of it as a bucket of things that, there's a bucket of stuff I think I can fill and fit into without it spilling over and causing a problem. But, and from day to day, I've got a reasonable idea of what I can do. But sometimes it just, yeah, sometimes it is unpredictable. Sometimes there might be a change in the environment that you're not aware of. Like there might be increase in allergen load in the environment. Suddenly there's a whole lot of pollen I'm not aware of. I don't get normal hay fever symptoms, so I don't get the hay fever symptoms, but suddenly my capacity, my PEM, like, is triggered so much more easily.
So is it about really knowing and understanding your body and knowing what the rhythm of your body is and what the things are that you respond to, and then whilst you're not necessarily expecting to go into PEM, you do know that if you do A, B, C and D at a particular time for a particular length of time, then the likelihood is that you're going to get PEM. Therefore, your pacing prior to that has to be more rigorous in order to, and it's all about the battery, isn't it? The body battery, to have enough energy in your body to keep going.
Yes. Sorry, my brain is just, I'm just sort of following along. Yes, it is. In general, it's about understanding your individual triggers, what your environmental supports are. And I think it's also that you're never going, I think it's unreasonable to never experience PEM. Like, I think it'd be really hard not to, just to live life. But it is also trying to keep that PEM pretty minimal, like how often, and also not as, and the severity. Like, I was able to recover from that PEM within about 24 hours by doing that aggressive rest when I went, oh, this is really not good. I was able to, because I'm not constantly in PEM, I'm not constantly having that happen to me. I think some people do need to live in just such a tight bubble because that's where, you know, any bit of PEM just really, really whacks them and it's really, really, really bad for them. For me, I've got a little bit of more elasticity in that, but I'm still very careful. I don't want to be in severe PEM because I don't want that baseline to erode. It's also about, so I was thinking about, how do you preserve that battery? Yes, there's pacing. Pacing, we talk about, it's a cornerstone, but it's also about removing other loads that you can. So if you find out that you've got allergies to something, talk to your doctor about how you can best manage your allergies. So in spring, we aggressively manage hay fever stuff, and that helps. I like to say that ME/CFS comes with a bunch of friends, so I have a bunch of comorbidities, and I am a pain in the butt with my doctors because I don't accept, oh, that's just that. And I'm like, well, no, I want my pain managed absolutely more optimally. I need to know that I've explored all options for something, because if I can remove that load of pain, that's that little bit of extra pressure off my body and my system, which means that maybe I can do something else nice, or maybe, you know, I can put something else in that bucket, or that bucket's not going to overflow so easily. Make sure I have quite severe orthostatic problems, so problems with my blood pressure and my heart rate. I managed that aggressively, and I pushed for medical management of that pretty aggressively too, and that made a big difference to my baseline. So I think those are things that help to, I guess, support your body. And I guess when we're talking about load, they're all load. Like, they're all exertion on your body. Yep. They're all going to take energy. So, yeah.
So I'm just going to pick you up on a couple of things. Mm-hmm. I love the comment that you made about you're pretty assertive with your doctor.
I'm a pain.
The managing of what you believe you need.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to think that for a lot of people that might be a lot more difficult,
being absolutely
assertive,
yeah,
with your health professionals. So I've now got two questions.
Okay.
One is regarding, from your professional perspective, the medical community's understanding of PEM. Do they really understand the treatment of this multi-system complex chronic condition? That's number one. And number two, what do you think would be helpful for patients when they go to see their doctor in terms of empowering them to be more assertive and to say, this is what I want, and to maybe not be afraid of saying, well, I want my pain managed. In allergy season, I want to be aggressive about managing those allergies because they lead to A, B, and C. What kind of tools do you think would be helpful for patients when they go to their doctors? Because I seem to think from people that I've spoken to, you know, they say, well, A, my doctor doesn't believe me, or B, they say, well, there's not much that they can do. And yet you're saying you're quite directive.
I'll answer the second one first. Yes, I am quite directive. That's the privilege of a healthcare background. I think there's that. And don't think that I haven't completely melted down in doctor's appointments or lost, or just been completely lost and not known what to say and walked out crying. And, you know, that's definitely happened. So I have a small insight into what that can be like. You know, I think we have this graphic on the website where we have, it's kind of like these concentric circles of, I can't remember what we call it, but when you think about your healthcare team and how you approach
patient-centered care.
Possibly. I'm just trying to think of the name of the actual graphic. But yeah, it is. It's talking about work. I think it's working with your healthcare team or something like that. But, you know, it's kind of a nested centered circle. So in the middle, it's you and whoever you choose to be in that core part of your team. You know, it's you and, you know, and a carer or an advocate or you and your GP or an ally, you know, just a trusted person. That's the person that you feel that you can talk the most about your ME/CFS and who understands it most. Not everyone has that person, and I absolutely hear that. So, but, you know, as that sent, and then, you know, then you can kind of go, well, in that next circle, you've got some, you know, they're pretty good, that, you know, that you see them fairly frequently. They're the people that manage particular conditions. You know, it might be an allied health professional that helps you with your pacing or with managing a musculoskeletal issue that you have. They probably have a decent understanding of ME/CFS, but if they, I guess what I'm trying to say is, if they don't have a solid understanding of ME/CFS, just because they don't, it doesn't mean that they can't add something to your needs. It might be that, okay, I need to see someone about this particular pain issue. As long as they can understand that they can't prescribe me a full set of exercises that causes PEM, as long as they can understand that this is a target that they need to reduce how much they prescribe. I'm not explaining this very clearly. I think the way I go into it is saying not everyone is going to understand everything. I just can't expect everyone to understand post-exertional malaise yet. It's just unreasonable. And so I go in with a specific thing in mind. It might be, even if all I can get them to understand is my fatigue is really intense, if they can't understand PEM, if they have to understand it from the paradigm of fatigue and that's what I need from this consult, I'll just go, look, I feel terrible. My symptoms are awful. Last time when I tried this particular medication for allergies, it really helped. I'd really like to take it during springtime and try that again and see if that helps reduce my symptoms. That's kind of how I'll approach it. Is that being clear enough? I'm still being really directive, I know.
But that's all right.
And I think also you can take it by going, I don't know what's going to help, but these are my symptoms and I'm hoping that we can manage them more so that I can feel a bit better. You know, I think I don't want to be in a, for me, I'm not going to be educating people in a medical consult. That's not why I'm there. You know, that's my personal medical consult. And I think to feel like you have to change the world when you go into a medical consult is unreasonable. And it's not, don't put that pressure on yourself. It's hard enough just changing, getting that little bit of result that you need for that particular issue that you're there for. I think also remember, especially GPs are working in very tight consult times. They can't, unless you're there for a, you've booked a long, long appointment, they can't deal with multiple issues in one appointment. So I guess also understanding that the time pressures that they're under so that you don't get as frustrated that they can't deal with like 5 million symptoms.
I think that that's a really important point. You know, we work within an imperfect system.
And it's very imperfect.
And, you know, therefore, all of us, whether we've got ME/CFS or not, need to understand that when you go into a consultation with your healthcare professional, don't expect that you're going to be there for an hour because it'll take you that long to explain what's wrong. It's always good to make a bit of a list, to be specific.
Yes. And we've got some good tools on the website, you know, helping to organise your thoughts going into it. I usually write down what I want to talk about.
Yep.
Because I forget. You're going to forget. Like, even though I know what I want to do, I forget.
Yeah, I don't have ME/CFS and I forget.
Yeah, you know? We all do.
I go in and I say, I've got to get this and I've got to get that, and I go out with two completely different things and I go, but I didn't ask that question.
Exactly.
How dumb is that?
And this is, it's, I think the costs are higher when going to a medical appointment because of all the energy costs and the PEM involved. And so it can feel like the stakes are a lot higher.
Yes.
Well, the stakes are a lot. It's not just feel, the stakes are a lot higher. So, you know, that feel, you know, it's normal to feel all that pressure and nervousness and then frustration with yourself afterwards when you didn't deal with everything or when the doctor might have dismissed a particular thing, or you'd feel like that's all. I don't know if I have a solution for that, but I think at least acknowledging that that's all normal. That's all okay. Like, it's okay to be frustrated with yourself or to feel anxiety about, you know, something that means a lot to your sense of well-being and safety. It's okay to go to a different provider as well. If you feel like you're not being listened to,
get a second opinion.
It's okay. And it's okay to get a third opinion. Like, you know, if you feel like this particular symptom really needs managing and someone's not listening, we have a health system where obviously depending where you live and how many GPs or whatever are available, you can go see someone else.
And so I'm going to take you back to the medical community.
Yeah.
I'm going to take you back to, you know, your role at Emerge Australia is you're the clinical educator. And you manage clinical education programs. So from your experience of working with clinicians, what more needs to be done to ensure proper recognition and treatment?
Oh, gosh. Sorry to just laugh like hysterically. So much. But I also want to say that, you know, obviously I think most of us have noticed that before COVID, seeing health practitioners or researchers talking about PEM and ME/CFS on social media was pretty rare. Now we've got a lot of it happening. So I think there's a lot of positive things that are happening. I think there is more clinician awareness. We have had people approaching us, asking us to give presentations and help them up, you know, updates on managing particularly pacing and PEM. So there's some positive things happening, but I think, you know, I think this is a lot of the stuff that we've talked about so often. It needs to be taught in undergraduate school, understanding those that PEM is different and that how to identify PEM is important because it will change how you practice and approach something. It needs to then be reinforced in the appropriate areas of postgraduate education. It needs to be part of continuing professional development for clinicians, especially clinicians that are, well, I think all of them, because anyone can be experiencing PEM and, you know, someone can be going to hospital for a broken leg, but if they experience post-exertional malaise, how their rehab is approached is going to be different. So everybody in the care team does need to be screening for PEM. It's not just this little niche area of ME/CFS that only a weird bunch of doctors deal with. No, the whole health system needs to understand PEM. But I think, you know, what I was also thinking about was, and this is culture change and behaviour change is harder. And I was thinking, so I used to work in infection control, and you could really tell the difference between different units' culture and how, and, you know, how they approach, say, hand hygiene and how they supported each other with aseptic technique or aseptic non-touch technique or hand hygiene or other areas of infection control, you know, and you could see that it, in the units that were, had a really positive culture about that, that wasn't just one or two nurses or one or two doctors. That was everybody supporting everybody with that culture. And you noticed it with infection rates. It was a thing. So this is a more amorphous kind of thing, but we need to see a culture change in how, and I think particularly senior clinicians, how they talk about patients who report post-exertional malaise and how they talk about screening for post-exertional malaise in their patients. That has a big trickle-down effect to the doctors under them and the, or the more junior nurses or the more junior allied health professionals. People model behaviour and they model culture. That, and so it's not just education, it's a whole cultural mindset shift around screening for energy issues and particularly PEM. I don't know how to do that. I'm just saying that I actually think that when we start seeing that, then we've made a big breakthrough, because that's when you start to see just, it's almost like it has its own legs. It'll just take, it takes off. It's, yep. It becomes more normal. It's normal to say, oh, so when you said that you did this thing the other day, how were you 2 days later? How did you respond to that activity? How did you respond to the exercises that I gave you? Were you okay yet the day after? Were you okay a couple of days later? Or did you start to feel some funny, you know, what happened in your body? Having that curiosity and, you know, even simple things like writing in the notes. Patient has ME/CFS and experiences post-exertional malaise. We need to adapt their rehabilitation in this setting by doing X, Y, and Z. I would fall over if I saw that in some patient minds. It would make me so happy.
I'm going to stop you there.
Yes, sorry, I'm rambling on.
No, that's all right. Because, the you know, the theme of ME/CFS Awareness Week this year is PEM under the banner of the hidden harm of trying harder.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that historically that's part of the stigma, isn't it, that you need to try harder, you need to exercise more, get better. Do you see from your professional perspective that the understanding is changing culturally amongst clinicians that, you know, trying harder a la graded exercise therapy is no longer as prevalent as it used to be?
I think there's pockets of it. Like, I think there's pockets of change, but I think there's also pockets of digging in and sort of pushing for that. I think people are calling it different things. They may not be calling it GET anymore, but, you know, they might talk about, oh, you know, what we do is we establish pacing, we establish stability, and then we start having increases in activity, you know, and that's, there's one thing to be stable and go, oh, I wonder if I can just challenge myself a little bit and see how I respond. That's one thing. to be stable and then go, well, now each week you're going to increase your activity by 5%. That's still get. And so I think that there's quite a lot of lack of consensus across the board still.
And it's that pushing, this is what I really want to get to.
Mm.
It's that pushing and trying harder that actually leads to the crash, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's listen to your patients. It's just 101. Does your patient get worse after they do something? That's not normal. Let's look at how we can make that so they don't get worse. And yes, and push. And if they have PEM and you keep pushing, they will get worse. And that's, don't experiment with that. Don't go, oh, we're just going to see how you go. It sounds like from our screening questionnaires that you might have PEM. Let's just give you get and see how you go and see if you crash and burn, and then we'll don't do that. Because yes, that so many patients have reported harm from that. If a patient is pacing, they will naturally do as much as they can within their limits, because unless there's serious mental health stuff going on, and even then, if there's serious mental health stuff and they still have PEM, that's still PEM. But most people want to keep doing stuff. They want to live their lives to the full. I just think that's a normal default kind of.
So that's the issue, isn't it? Everybody wants to lead their lives.
They've got hopes and dreams and things to do.
As they wish.
Yeah.
People with ME/CFS have to monitor the intensity and duration of what they do, and they have to adapt.
Yep.
Their daily activities to accommodate the fluctuations in energy and not pushing harder and stopping themselves. Can someone stop themselves from getting PEM, or is it reducing the frequency of PEM?
Oh, look, I think that's a good question. Probably. That's true. I just feel like I haven't spoken to anyone with ME/CFS who actually does, who doesn't ever experience PEM. But I think I've spoken to a lot of people who are able to very much limit their PEM. So that's kind of where I'm at in my understanding of that. I'm happy to be corrected by someone by that as well. I just feel like life is pretty hard to predict all the time. And so I think it's a hard one to completely avoid altogether. We don't have a treatment for it. Pacing is just a management strategy. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly don't have a treatment.
No.
But there are treatments out there for postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And there are treatments like low-dose naltrexone that some patients use and find that it's helpful, but certainly don't have the magic silver bullet that says if you take this, you'll feel better. And that's what so much of the research is about. And we're living in these times that in many ways are quite exciting, because there's a lot of good research happening around the world at present. And I'm noticing that it's not just long COVID oriented.
Yes. Shifting. That's the important bit. Oh, look, some days I feel like I see it, and some days I'm like, oh no, we're just back to long. Like, yeah, I think I'd see both. But I think, yes, I think there's definitely some really exciting research out there and some amazing clinicians who are really working to do that cultural change that we're talking about, who are leading that. So I think it's hard to go, will that impact me in my lifetime? I don't know. But it is hopeful that that is happening. Yeah.
Finally, Kate, what message of hope or advice would you like to share with our listeners who might be struggling with the impact of PEM on their lives and the general impact of ME/CFS? What are your sort of messages of hope?
Recognize it sucks. Okay to say it sucks. It's okay. I get that everybody is different and everybody has different ways of wanting to approach how they frame their illness. For me, I'm pretty like, this sucks. I wish this would go away. There's no point pretending it doesn't. But within that, And I'm going to recognize my privilege here. I have a lot of support. So I think I've created, and I think I have a really good life amidst the suckiness. But I want to acknowledge that that is not the case for everybody. And I want to acknowledge that that lack of external support is a big part of why that happens. So I want to say, be kind to yourself. And there's no amount of perfect pacing that will fix PEM. You can't do it. I think that's been the message. The pacing is not perfect. We don't have a perfect solution for PEM. I think you can drive yourself nuts trying to, at least for me, like I said, you know, we did some really intensive monitoring to pick up some patterns. But for me, then I had to go, okay, I have a general sense of what works and what doesn't. Work out what works for you and what is a good mental space for you for managing that. And this sounds simple, but if you can ask for help, and like I said before, you know, obviously that depends on what your external kind of supports look like and what things you have access to. So I do want to put a plug in for, and I know they're probably going to be like, no, we've got enough people. But the Emerge Australia Telehealth and Support Service is a really valuable resource if you need to talk to a sounding board about looking for those external supports if you don't have them in your life. I think it's, you know, that's important too. And what I did want to say is, yes, there's some really amazing researchers and clinicians out there, and that's actually really hopeful as well.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kate. Today's podcast is part of a series that Emerge Australia is recording with people of influence, people with lived experience. It's a platform where we can together explore the pressing issues faced by 250,000 people with ME/CFS and at least 400,000 more with long COVID in Australia. If the content of this or other Emerge Australia podcasts has triggered an emotional response for which you need assistance, feel free to contact Lifeline on 13 1114, their Crisis Support and Suicide Prevention Service. You may also go onto the Emerge Australia website where emergency services are listed, and always consult a qualified healthcare professional for advice regarding your own health. So please tune in again for our next interview, and don't forget, for more information and to subscribe to the Emerge Australia newsletter, visit our website on www.emerge.org.au. Kate Herbert, thank you so much for sharing your life with us with ME/CFS and what it feels like to have PEM. I'm sure that so many of our listeners would have identified with the struggles that you face on a daily basis. So thank you for allowing us to speak to you on this. And bye for now.
You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. And I hope someday you'll join.